I go, oh, this is how I feel. And it's about how you read books and read in books as teacher and ally. You sent me on a whole process when I read this part, and I want you to talk about that. And then I want you to talk specifically about the circles that you've had where you use books as oracles.
Oh, well, thank you. So,
okay.
Yeah, so this is a centerpiece in this book is I wound up looking at the books that have shaped how I see and understand over time, and the books that have been the influencers in my life, and why. And so that was a very amazing journey to do that. And I invite anyone who's listening to do that as well. It's really was a great experience. And, you know, I remember, for instance, you know, one of the very first books was when I was in like seventh and eighth grade, and I had an amazing English teacher, Miss Forshee, and who I have connected with after all these years wonderfully. And she must have seen something in me, because I would hang around and ask all these questions about what we were reading. And then one day she gave me a very small book by Ian Rand, a novel called Anthem. It isn't The Fountainhead or Atlas Shrugged. It's a very small, thin book called Anthem. And she just said, I wonder what you would think about this. Why don't you take it home? And, oh, I was just, you know, devoured it. And it was one of the first things that taught me about the power of narrative, because this is a dystopian story, kind of like Brave New World or 1984 by George Orwell. But the entire thing is told, the storyteller is using the pronoun we. And so you get through the whole book, and then at the very end, you discover that it's a single person, but the word I has been banished from this society. And so this character rediscovers the self. And just that turn in storytelling opened up a whole world to me as a little seventh grader of that forever shaped my mind about the magic of narrative. That was early on influence. And so other books, I mean, I'll tell you one other kind of amazing teaching for me, turning point, was Helen Liu, the Jungian analyst, who was a mentor for me. And she wrote a book, which I referenced there, Dark Wood to White Rose, which is all about the journey of transformation in Dante's Divine Comedy. Now, even when I met her, I mistakenly, you know, she had asked me if I had read it, not because she wrote it, but because she sensed something in my journey would be helped by looking at this. And I hadn't at the time. And I actually kind of mistakenly avoided it because I thought, oh, this is going to be literary criticism. I've had enough of that. Well, it's anything but. And I actually wound up reading it after she passed away, which was kind of beautiful because I heard her voice as I read it. And what she shares in this, which is remarkable, is that the journey that Dante takes through hell and purgatory and paradise is not a climb up a mountain. It's a horizontal journey. That is, we're all the same 6 inches from heaven or hell, depending on if we fall down or get up. And she says it's a journey of consciousness. And she equates hell as the cost of false living, and purgatory as the struggle to be real, and paradise as the struggle to stay real. Forever changed my approach to life. Forever changed it. So I invite people to think about the influencers in your lives. And,
right.
And so the thing about using books as oracles is I've always read kind of in a cross-pollinating way with many books at once, and we'll go from one book to another. And we do have it with our loved ones and friends every once in a while, you know, instead of a dinner party, we have a book party. And, you know, for dessert, we just bring out dozens of books, and we invite people to bring a handful of books. So everybody brings 6 or 10 books, and we just put them on the floor in the living room on top of each other. And then we take a turn. Every person just goes in and intuitively picks up a book and opens it and reads what they find. And we do that until everyone has read. And then we look at what these voices say to us together or alone. And then we do it again, and we do as many rounds as feels right. And then we know when the evening's over.
And don't you make it like a, you can feel a field of meaning kind of coming out? It becomes cohesive.
So one of the ways that I write is that if I'm working and exploring, let's say I'm exploring just what we talked about, this notion of this journey of transformation, well, I will start to write, and then I will suddenly say, you know, I wonder what Carl Jung has to say about that. And I'll go back here and pull out a book of his and just open it and read a paragraph. And most of the time, it speaks to what I'm exploring. And then I'll pull out someone else. And then I'll have 6, 7, 8 things. And then all of a sudden I look, and all those quotes help me weave a tapestry that becomes a chapter in one of the books.
Mark, I do somewhat the same thing, because like when I'm preparing for an interview, and oftentimes it's with someone who's written a book, so I'm reading the book and I take notes as I go along. I do it verbally, just talking to my computer,
and
it turns things into a document. So like for our conversation, I have 31 pages.
Oh my God. Yes. Wow.
Of conversation that I have already had with you. I already started my conversation with you, and I did just what you're talking about. I read something you said, and I make my own little note within that. And then it would take me to, oh, I'm going to look that up. Oh, he said theater. Okay, the Greek word for that is what? To see or to be present. Be, all right. And so then I look that up, and then I go into that, or some myth you bring up. And so I'm already in this deep conversation before we even start this recording.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you. And let me use that as a way to talk about that. This is a way that the heart learns, to go back to the heart. And it's a deeper way of learning and moving through life. So certainly we all have our destinations and our plans and our goals. But I have learned over my years to hold them loosely. They only navigate the surface world of circumstance. If I am interested in that aliveness and that relationship and experiencing meaning, inevitably I'm asked to put aside what I want and weave the lessons that I'm given. And so the very thing that we're talking about in terms of how we happen to be approaching writing, which I think of now in this point in my life as listening and taking notes more than saying what it is I have to say. This is also how the heart learns. This is how the heart weaves from point of meaning to point of meaning. And you know, it was William Blake who said, straight is the road to improvement, but crooked is the road to genius. And what's important there is not genius in the way we think of it as an exceptional capacity, but genius in the original definition. Genius means attendant spirit. Everyone has a genius. Everyone has a genius. This shares the root with the word genie. So straight is the road to improvement, but crooked is the road to relating to your attendant spirit, which will help you be most alive. And this is when we look at Aladdin's lamp. It's not just about a genie giving you what you want. It's more deeply at a Jungian and a metaphysical level. It's more deeply when you embrace the light of your life, your attendant spirit shows up to guide you.
I want to ask you then, I think our challenge is to notice when that guiding spirit is answering us. Like if we're saying, okay, help me, or whatever we're doing, how do we stop long enough to notice the signs that are being given to us?
Well, I think we have to, and this speaks to a larger problem in our age currently. And, you know, I think there are so many things that have isolated and, you know, which I dealt with in Surviving Storms, that have isolated and cracked us and kept us insular. And I feel like we, a good majority, or at least a good portion of humanity, has lost its direct connection to life. And so all the traditions speak about restoring that. That's what consciousness, that's what heart, knowing by heart, is all about. And so how do we know this? Well, there are facts. There are facts that we can agree on, you know, and we can have conversations about what they mean. But, you know, if I put my hand in water, I don't need you to tell me it's wet. I know what pain is. I know what love is. I know what fear is. I know what safety is. I know what wonder is. And so how do we restore our direct connection with life? Because when we have a direct connection with life, we have a reverence for life. And if we have a reverence for life, we can't do harm. This is one of the things that so shocked me, as so many people, when I witnessed the insurrection live on TV. Because here, forget the politics, here were people being barbarically cruel while taking pictures of themselves. And that told me that direct connection is severed. They don't know if this is real or a video game.
Right.
And so the greatest gift we can do right now is to keep restoring our direct connection of life and to keep building on what we know to be true. So when we come back after the break, let me talk about the practice of honoring as a way to do that.
Great. I'm here with Mark Nepo. He is the author of Falling Down and Getting Up, Discovering Your Inner Resilience and Strength. And he also mentioned his previous book, Surviving Storms. And, you know, so many wonderful, wonderful books that you have given us in the Book of Poetries. I'm here with Mark Nepo. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with poet and spiritual teacher, fellow explorer and pilgrim on the path, I would say, Mark Nepo. And we want to talk about the honoring that you were just describing.
Yeah, so this is one of the, you know, the word honor is an amazing word, because what it literally means is to keep what is true in view. So if we want to restore our direct connection in life, we need to keep what is true in view. We need to personalize and a practice of honoring. So if you and I, as friends, and you come to me in a time of cloudedness where you've lost a sense of yourself, I honor you by keeping what I know to be true about you in view so you can see it. I honor myself by keeping what I know to be true about my spirit in view. It doesn't stay hidden. I honor life itself. So how do we in all directions invoke and literally, and this was I would call spiritual practicality, what does a practice of honoring look like for you? Very specifically and personally, because that helps us remember the things about this life that are true and irreducible. So another way to ask that, a question I would offer people who are listening is, can you describe one, two, or three reliable truths you can return to? One, two, or three reliable truths that are foundational for you that you can return to. How can you honor them? How can you keep those truths in view so you don't forget them?
This reminds me of two things that I have picked up from readings of your many books. Two things. One that really popped out for me, Mark, was a way in which we can really touch into spirit and into our own aliveness is to practice loving at least one thing.
Yes.
Okay, our assignment. I mean, we don't have to love it all. We don't have to take it all in. We don't have to be all and for everyone. But if we can love one thing deeply, that accomplishes something that enlivens us. Am I getting that?
Yes, I believe that if we love one thing deeply and wholeheartedly, we will not only learn how to love, but we will love the world through the one thing. Because everything in this life, at least I feel, and there are, you know, two historic camps on this. One feels that nothing is connected, and the other camp is that everything is connected. I certainly, as a poet, feel that everything is connected. And so when we love one, it's like electricity flowing through all the wires and it lights the one bulb. When we love one thing, that bulb goes on and it connects into the network of spirit that connects everything. And so, yes, desire, and I think there's a chapter in one of my books recently, that the 10,000 hands, where I use the metaphor of, you know, desire is the heart has 10,000 hands. It wants everything, and it wants it now. I want to eat all the flavors of ice cream. I want to love everybody. I want to have, you know, love four people at once. Well, we're human, and we might be able to do that, but we won't do it well, because we can only love one thing at a time well. So instead of and obeying the 10,000 hands draws us out of our life out there. If I can just get that, if I can get over there, if I can have enough of this or enough of that, then I'll be happy or whatever. And of course, if we take that far enough, that's the root of all addiction. This one more drink, one more, buy one more thing, gamble on one more thing, take one more drug, sleep with one more person, whatever it might be. And I'm not talking about morality. I'm talking about, this is spiritual physics too. But I only have two hands. And so if through my heart, this is where the heart again is the thing in us that directs where our life force goes. If I take all that desire from the 10,000 hands and put it into the two hands I have, and whatever, and bring it to you, one person, then eternity opens up.
Exactly, exactly. And that connects to the other piece that I brought, and this has to do with, and you've already really said this yourself, we are in kinship with everything. And we may forget that, and we may feel alone and isolated, and the stories we tell ourselves, we wall ourselves off. But the truth is, we actually are in kinship.
This is, you know, one of the great metaphors for this is the Hindu image of Indra's net. And Indra was one of the Hindu gods, the god of connection. And Indra is believed to have had a palace hovering above the earth. And Indra made a net that covered all of existence. And instead of knots at every interstice, there was a jewel. And if you look closely enough at any one of the jewels, you could see reflected in it all the other jewels in the entire net. And it's a spiritual form of DNA. And so early Hindu teachers very quickly took this and said, those jewels are our heart. And when our heart is clear, in any heart that is clear and loving, you can see all the other hearts that ever lived and how they're connected, reflected in one clear heart. And the Sufis have a practice known as polishing the heart till it becomes a mirror. So how does that translate down into everyday life? Brilliant as our minds are, there's only so far my mind can go. And so when I am stumped, give, be kind, love, and all of a sudden the connections. And so in Indra's net, when you're not clear, well, then we turn back into a knot. We can't see the net and how it, but we are still holding the net together.
I have to go with the metaphor of the net to go further with it.
Sure.
Because I was trying to look up on my notes right now, because that here's what I wrote. I said, we must feed more than our fear and touch more reliable truth that resides beneath all fear. And then you say, it's like a strong net that softens the carriage of weight and the strength of our kinship with all things.
Yes.
Yes.
A very real example of that is because the net of relationship distributes the suffering. If you carry something physical in a net, if you and I carry it, we distribute the weight by carrying it in the net. So I have a dear, dear friend who helped save my life almost 40 years ago. And just last year, he lost his wife very suddenly to a massive heart attack. And he's just devastated. And I've been there, want to, and am. We are journeying together. Well, I have other dear friends who only know of him through me. They don't know him. But because they know I'm holding him, they're holding me. And we take turns. Next year, I might be the one that's being held by you. And people you know who don't know me will hold you, and that is distributing the net. And so that, to me, I'm turning the word net into a verb. That is the art of netting.
I love it. I love it. And I so have my own experience of that recently with with the death of my dear circle sister, who I was in circle with for 45 years. And and we did her burial yesterday, and it was a natural burial where she was wrapped in a shroud, and we all participated in all facets of all of this dying and burial, and it brought together again, it knitted, as you said, together, netted together us as a community. And even in the grief, there is like this collective holding that we're all doing with each other. It's strengthened the community.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. When we can be who we are everywhere, then the resources of life are there to hold us up, to hold us up.
Oh, wow. We've just gone so deep and so far. I loved our journey together, and I've run out of time, but I just want to thank you so much, Mark, for being with us today. And I'd like to remind people that his newest writing is Falling Down and Getting Up, Discovering Your Inner Resilience and Strength. And to know more about him, go to his website, marknepo.com. And he spells his last name N-E-P-O, marknepo.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3792.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Margaret Wrinkle, author of The Comfort of Crows. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the natural world that exists in our own backyards.